Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Right now on Last Call, crunch time, the decisive vote that could ban TikTok coming in just hours. One of the senators who will help determine its fate will be here. The economy's secret sauce. New detail reveals what may be the real source of our strength, and it's probably not what you think. A tidal wave of earnings. We'll show you the biggest takeaways for your money ahead of tomorrow. Locked out. Housing affordability slipping even further. Look. Anything. Open the door for all you new buyers out there. The chair of REMAX is here. Plus, as a fresh wave of protests rocking college campuses, another billionaire donor is coming out to slam Columbia University. And call it a huge bonus. How DJT just delivered a new windfall for one DJT. All that and more. Over the hour, so belly up or buckle up, because Last Call is up right now. So, hi, everybody. I am Brian Sullivan. Welcome to Last Call. All that stuff that we just talked about coming up across the hour. But first up, the breaking news that you just saw, that is Tesla. Because Elon Musk doubling down even in the face of slowing demand. The super billionaire telling investors, quote, EVs will ultimately dominate the market. And despite Tesla's less than satisfactory first quarter report, shares are surging. Phil LeBeau joining us now with what has investors excited about the quarter, apparently, Phil.
It's not the quarter, Brian. It's about the future, and we'll talk about that in a bit. You said less than stellar first quarter. Let's be honest. It was ugly, plain and simple. You want to know how ugly it was? Take a look at the key metrics here. Earnings down 45% year over year. Revenue down 9% year over year. By the way, they missed on the top and the bottom line. Well below expectations. Free cash flow, negative $2.53 billion. And that revenue down 9%. The worst year-over-year revenue decline since 2012. You look at that and say, well, then why is the stock up 10%? Here's why. The company is saying that it will be accelerating its plans for future vehicles. More importantly, while they haven't given us details about exactly the price or the types of vehicles, they do expect these to have a lower, more affordable price point. Elon Musk talking about it just a few minutes ago during the company's conference call.
These new vehicles, including more affordable models, will use aspects of the next generation platform, as well as aspects of our current platforms, and will be able to be produced on the same manufacturing lines as our current vehicle lineup. So it's not contingent on any new factory or massive new production line. It'll be made on our current production lines much more efficiently.
All right, what about deliveries this year? The company saying that the pace of deliveries, the growth of deliveries, will be notably lower this year compared to 2023. They were up about 38% in 2023. Elon Musk was specifically asked during the conference call, Brian, does this mean that you will have lower annual deliveries? And he said, no, we do expect deliveries to grow. They're just not going to grow like they did last year. And as for those lower priced or more affordable vehicles, he expects production to start on those in the first half of 2025, perhaps even late this year. Though, let's be honest, that for that to happen, they would really have to accelerate plans. I think the first half of next year, if you're looking at this and saying, when will this start? That's when you should expect it. And again, we don't know details about what these lower priced, more affordable vehicles will be, what it entails. Those are details that still need to come out.
Okay. Full disclosure, Phil, unlike you, I did not listen to the full call. I was a little bit busy prepping for the show, but I got two questions for you. Look at some of the quick takeaways. Number one, Musk did kind of admit that some other automakers are pulling back or scaling back on their pure battery electric ambitions. He talked a little bit about hybrids.
Yes.
But he's still bullish on EVs. Hit that. And then also, we have to talk humanoid robots, because as I understand it, this optimist, this humanoid robot, Musk was saying the robot may start working in the factory and then maybe they could start to sell it even early next year.
Yes, he did say both of those things. Let's start first off with his comments about other automakers. He has always said, and he still maintains, that if the future of autos is going to be written someday, it will be written in a conversion to fully electric vehicles. And that companies that maybe have started taking a step towards EVs have now pulled back and said, well, let's make some hybrids, because hybrids have become more popular in the last, let's say, 12 to 18 months. He believes that's a mistake. With regard to the Optimus robot that they have been developing, he said that they already have it doing some factory-type functions in a lab. In other words, if you're going to be doing XYZ on the line, they were having the Optimus work on that and practice that now, and that it could be put into some of the Tesla production facilities at some point. And then he believes that they could sell it outside. To outside, whether it's companies, whether it's individuals, whatever, he does see that as a distinct possibility.
Yeah, that is truly remarkable. We've got the video running right now. I mean, that maybe one day that could be the future of the Tesla workforce. We'll see. Phil LeBeau, really appreciate it. Great stuff. Thank you. All right, so let's dive in a little more on Tesla, some of its recent woes, where it's going, robots. I'm just going to say robots over and over again. Let's take it to our leadoff panel. Joining us on set tonight, Wedbush Securities Managing Director Dan Ives and Gerber Kawasaki President and CEO Ross Gerber. Dan, first to you. Numbers were, I was trying to be polite. I said less than optimal, maybe less than Optimus is what I should have said. Phil kind of laid it out. What was your biggest takeaway for the quarter?
Tesla needed an adult in the room, and Musk was the adult in the room on this conference call. The big thing, the most important thing is that they are not going just straight to autonomy. A Model 2, a sub-30K vehicle, will be out, and that's accelerated. And that's music to the ears of the street. You went in, investors were expecting a disaster, another comedy show conference call. Instead, you actually have a pilot on the plane navigating, and it's not Ted Stryker.
Nice airplane reference. Ted Stryker? Ross, what was your biggest takeaway from the quarter, from the guidance? Anything that, I mean, investors like it, but the stock has, I don't need to tell you, has been in a rut the last number of months.
Yeah, you know, I agree with Dan. You know, Elon did a, you know, Tesla, what I call Tesla Elon, which is the Elon that people like in this call, which was definitely necessary. And he certainly didn't poo-poo the idea of having a $25,000 or less model, which is irrelevant of the financial deterioration of the overall fundamentals of the company. So I think if you look at Tesla, like robots and robot cars, and obviously thinking that this is going to happen in 12 months is probably a little bit aggressive. And we all know that Elon's timelines are usually 3 to 4 years aggressive. But that said, that vision long-term is wonderful. It's just the transition to this and what it will look like financially. It seems for sure that shareholders will be sacrificed for mass adoption of EV vehicles. So profits and margins that we expected on Tesla will continue to probably go lower, even though volumes might go higher.
Ross, back to you, because you posted something on the Elon Musk-owned X today, and you said, here's the problem. The problem is that Tesla is not making money selling cars anymore.
Right.
Now, I'm going to ask an insane question, because that's what we do. Why not, right? Which is, do they need to make money selling cars? And hear me out. Number one, you got all the credits, okay, selling those. But GM and Ford, they need to make money selling cars, because that's what they do. And if they didn't do that, then there is no GM and Ford. Tesla is not them. They've got the AI infrastructure. They've got the Optimus robots. They got the robo-taxis. They got all the other stuff coming. Is there a, quote, razor blade model on the Tesla automotive side where they can sell cars at cost and still make billions, or no?
No, and you know, I look at it as like the Apple model. You know, Apple purposely doesn't give away phones, even though they make a ton on services. And if you look at Tesla's services revenue, it was up 25%. So it's a very similar model. But should Apple just give away iPhones to make sure that everybody has an iPhone versus making the 40% margins and being one of the most valuable companies in the world? So once again, if as long as Tesla shareholders are fine with a much less profitable version of the company, then this vision works fine. But I think, you know, there's a difference between owning a Tesla and buying a Tesla and being a shareholder.
I disagree with Ross in terms of what he's talking about, saying that this is not important. I mean, because I could argue Tesla over the coming years could be one of the biggest AI companies out there. And look, for Musk.
Yeah, but Elon said he's not going to build it unless he has 25%. That's the problem.
Yeah, but again, if you look at this conference call and how he laid out the vision, Ross, and obviously all the criticism going in, if there were five things that he needed to show, I think he showed all of them. I actually think investors, and I've heard from some, come out of this conference call viewing Tesla dramatically different than the train wreck, and we've talked about it, that it felt like the last few months. And again, it goes back to finally there was an adult in the room.
But Dan, you're discounting the end of the call with Martin resigning, and you and I have been working with Martin for a long time, and he is the glue in management and shareholders and investors, and he continues to lose seasoned top executives during this really important transition, and I find that to be concerning. Despite what you, I do agree, the vision he laid out is one that we've invested in and hope happens, but it just seems like there's this talk and vision, and then there's this like reality we're seeing under it, which just doesn't look anything like the talk.
Yeah, and I think now it's really a prove me going forward in terms right. of for Tesla. But if you look at how they've laid it out with the vehicle, the sub 30K being accelerated into next year, the FSD in terms of laying out the AI vision, I believe right now you have just dramatically bad news baked in for what I believe, you know, could ultimately be a company that's worth a trillion, trillion and a half, 2 trillion when you look out in the next 4, 5, 6 years.
Yeah, listen, Ross and I have talked about this in the past, which is if you've got these products like full self-driving, which is FSD, which is what we're referencing, you need to show it off. And Ross, you and I have talked about this, and I know this is not the Musk way. There's no PR team at Tesla. Most car companies have like 50 PR people. They have zero. Right? You don't see Tesla TV commercials. Every time I watch, is watching the Knicks, amazing victory last night, incredible end of the game. Every commercial break almost is a car, and they're showing off how you don't need to touch the wheel, and it's Blue Cruise, and it's Super Cruise for GM. You've got this amazing thing, and you can't rely, Ross, on everybody to be on X. I get it. A small percentage of the American population is on the app formerly known as Twitter. Would you like to see Tesla change their ways, spend a little money, put out a national TV ad? I know of a great show, by the way, that would love to have that, and show people what they may be missing, because it feels like there's a stall right now with the buyers.
100%. And this is what we've been saying for a year plus, is that they've sold all the cars to buyers that exist. And Elon just seems to not want to address the monkey in the room, which is there's no demand for the vehicles, no matter if they flew, because people don't even know. And you're absolutely right. The game was great, by the way, last night. Not the Laker game, that's for sure. But the other game was great. And why is there not ads telling you that charging is not a hassle and it doesn't take 2 hours and that these are wonderful vehicles that last forever? I mean, God, you know, one of my friends was driving around a 10-year-old Tesla without any issues, you know. So there's all these positives that consumers don't know about. And what they're seeing are headlines of anti-Semitism. They're seeing racism. They're seeing all the negative constantly because he's putting it out 30 times a day on Twitter. And then the media picks it all up. So all this vision stuff for Tesla, I'm an investor. I hope it works. You know, like for sure. And I've cut back my stake because I think there's a disconnect between the buyers who are not buying Teslas and this great product.
And we got to go. But Dan,
just don't want.
It's fair points. Dan, we got to go. But I want to ask very quickly. I don't want to pick on Tesla. And by the way, all the stuff that you're right. If you talk to any dealers, regular car, not Tesla dealers, obviously, they'll tell you some of the questions people have, which not disrespecting anybody. Sometimes they're way out there. You can educate through these media campaigns. That said, it's not just Tesla. Rivian's getting destroyed. Lucid getting destroyed. Ford and GM are pulling back. I mean, this is not a Tesla issue. entirely.
No, and look, you never thought GM would shine on in an environment where Tesla is sort of dark clouds.
GM is the best performing auto stock this year.
And you look,
it's up what, 26%.
And you look what GM's done, and I believe you saw a different Musk tonight on that conference call.
Well, wait for Dan Ives' note. Do you know this Ives guy? Is he going to be working all night?
I heard
him. He's working all night, put out the note. Ross Gerber, Gerber Kawasaki. Ross, thank you very much, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Rick.
All right, let's get a look at what happened here. Macro money today. And, you know, again, we had a nice Monday pop. We did not necessarily see, well, we did. It was good enough, I guess. The Dow is up 0.7%. NASDAQ up 1.5%. So coming off the last couple of weeks, little two-day run. Don't want to make too much of it. Don't want to jinx it. But we'll see. Stud and dud of the day. The stud was the heavily shorted Globe Life. That got, remember, it fell 50% a couple weeks ago. That stock up 14. The big decliner was LKQ, which, you know what that stands for? Like, kind, and quality. It's a used car parts company. How's that? The more you know. Let's get a quick check on futures here, see if this run may run through, and it might. We are seeing futures in the green. All right, up next. A final countdown, a landmark vote over TikTok's fate, hours away. One of the senators in the thick of it who will vote will join us next. Plus, frozen out, according to affording a home, somehow get even harder. But not all hope may be lost. The chair of RE/MAX is here with hopefully some good news.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
All right, welcome back. The Senate expected to clear a vote this evening that could force TikTok to find a new American owner or simply be banned. NBC News senior national political reporter Sahil Kapoor joining us now with more. Sahil, when I assume the vote is expected to pass, what's the timeline and what are the expectations?
Well, that's right, Brian. Our best intel is that this vote is expected to occur in the next few hours. The optimistic take I heard from one Republican senator I spoke to is that it could occur within the between the 9 and 10 p.m. And then there are some pessimists who believe that this could bleed into early Wednesday. Now, there is no doubt that the bill will pass. It moved forward earlier today on a vote of 80 to 19, which is more than enough support to ultimately get through. It's just really a question of how much longer some conservative opponents want to drag out the debate before the vote happens. Let's take a look at what's in this package. It's a sprawling $95 billion piece of legislation that includes $60 billion for Ukraine. That was the main holdup. It includes $20 billion in aid to Israel, as well as some humanitarian relief for Gaza. It has about $8 billion in security for Taiwan and the Indo-Pacific, and a policy that would require TikTok's parent company, the Beijing-based ByteDance, to sell the platform or face a nationwide ban in the United States. One man who's very happy about the impending passage of Ukraine funding here is Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. He's an ardent proponent of helping Ukraine. He's been pushing back against what he calls this isolationist strain within the Republican Party for months now. And he pinpoints two men in particular who he said forced the delay of passage of Ukraine aid, Tucker Carlson and Donald Trump. Let's play what McConnell said.
I think the demonization of Ukraine began by Tucker Carlson, who, in my opinion, ended up where he should have been all along, which is interviewing Vladimir Putin. And then our nominee for president didn't seem to want us to do anything at all. That took months to work our way through it.
Now, McConnell also said he believes Republicans have turned the corner on the isolationist movement. Whether that's true remains to be seen. But one thing is very clear. The fact that former President Trump went a bit wobbly on the issue of Ukraine aid, that he didn't make any attempt to kill this bill as he has with previous bills, certainly helped the vote count among Republicans. It's one of the reasons this bill is on track to pass with an overwhelming vote. Brian.
Sahil, it's got to be a sticky position for the White House because they want the Ukraine funding. They want the Israeli funding. Those are all the things the president has been asking for. But yet, if you pass it and then you sign it into law, you're going to tick, for pun intended, tick off millions of mostly younger voters who love TikTok and many people who make their entire living off of TikTok. It's a sticky situation.
It's an intriguing political dynamic, Brian, for a number of reasons. Yes, President Biden has championed this entire package. He views Ukraine aid in particular as an extremely important priority that he wants to get through. And the TikTok provision. Now, remember, this is 9 months in the bill, extendable to 12 months by the president for ByteDance to sell TikTok or have it banned in the United States. That means it will not happen until after the 2024 election, which is a crucial piece of political information about this bill, because it means that the young voters who might have a backlash to it, the app won't be banned before the election. So at least some of that backlash will be delayed till after the election. Brian.
Yeah, really amazing stuff. Glad you're there, Sahil. And 9 o'clock, I think we'll be all tuned in. Sahil, thank you. All right. Joining us now is Oklahoma Senator Mark Wayne Mullen. Senator Mullen, good to have you back on. I'm assuming you will
Thanks,
vote
Brian.
Yes on this bill to do all the
yes.
things plus ban TikTok.
Well, listen, we're not banning TikTok. I really push back when people say that, Brian, because what we're saying is that ByteDance, who is the parent company of TikTok, all we're saying is that you have to divest yourself of the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party. You can still keep the platform. You can still move forward. But the Chinese Communist Party is using the algorithm, which they developed for ByteDance, for TikTok, and the servers that they use to be able to push out their propaganda. Why would we give a Communist Party, who is arguably our largest adversary, a platform to access impressionable people across the United States? I mean, just look at the misinformation they put out when we first started talking about this, Brian. They started saying that people could be arrested and put in jail for 20 years, that we're trying to outright ban it altogether. That was never the truth. All we're saying is that if they're going to do business in the United States, they can't be partners with the Chinese Communist Party. That simple.
That's fair. Fair point in that TikTok, even if, quote, banned, and I'm doing the air quotes, Senator, may live on in a new form. We also know that the algorithm is TikTok in many ways. They will never, to your point, surrender that algorithm because that's we're going to find out what they know about, like, American children, right, and everybody's family life and where they go and what they wear. So TikTok.
That's exactly what China wants.
Yeah, of course they do. Can I put a live microphone and camera in everybody's home? Thanks. But if you rip out the algorithm, would we still have a TikTok, right?
Well, there's other platforms that have algorithm. Facebook has an algorithm. Instagram has the algorithm. X has an algorithm. True Social has an algorithm. It's not the algorithm that they're using. It's how they use it. For instance, the pro-Hamas movement that's being pushed out. Of course, they say pro-Palestinians, but it's pro-Hamas because Hamas controls Gaza. If you're putting out this pro-Hamas movement, there is another platform that's pushing that out, like TikTok. Why is TikTok doing that? Because Iran is an ally of China, and Iran is the backer of Hamas. All you have to do is follow it, and you'll understand where the misinformation is coming from. China is trying to draw dissent inside the American people, and they do that through the algorithm because the access they had through TikTok. They can keep their algorithms if they want to. You just can't allow CCP, you're the owner of ByteDance, to have that information anymore. It shouldn't be that hard. If you're really the mm-hmm. CEO that's wanting to do business inside the United States, this should be an easy decision. Let me tell you, there's people out there that's willing to buy the shares that CCP has with TikTok. So put them up for sale. if you want to keep your business open, do that. Or are you being controlled by the CCP and they're not willing to let you sell? Well, I would say that's probably the accurate movement there.
Well, Senator, speaking of stock, back in January, you disclosed that you did buy shares of Meta. That's, of course, you just mentioned Facebook, TikTok's main competitor. Stock's done very well. Congrats. Do you worry about the optics of voting on this legislation, but also owning Meta, which is going to benefit if TikTok indeed is either gone away
or
changed?
If you ask me what stock I own, I couldn't tell you. You know, I have third-party people that do that for me. I'm very hands-off. All we do is make sure that we file the reports that we're supposed to with ethics. So I couldn't tell you a single stock, and I mean that sincerely, that I own, because it's all in a large portfolio that my wife and I own together. But as far as there being a conflict, there's no conflict with me fighting against the Chinese Communist Party. I will fight against them every single time. So there's apples and oranges there. I'm not fighting against a company. I'm very pro-business. That's what got me in business, because regulators regulated one of my companies nearly out of business. What I'm saying is the Communist Party shouldn't be able to do business openly inside the United States and use the freedom of speech as a protection. They don't have protection. The Communist Party does not have protection inside the United States. They are our enemy, and we should fight against them every opportunity we have.
Senator Mullen, well, by the way, whoever bought the stock, you should give them a bonus, because they did great on it. Stocks well up. So kudos to them. Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, I got your vote tonight. We'll let you go vote and have a feeling we know the outcome. Senator, thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. On deck. Locked out. If you thought affording a home was tough now, wait till you see this. The Chair Remax is here.
Hi, I'm Ben. I suffer from a condition called writer's block. It strikes when I'm at work. That's why I choose Canva Magic Write. It works fast, generating texts in seconds, thanks to AI.
Common side effects include increased productivity, compliments from coworkers, feelings of satisfaction.
Now I can say bye-bye to writer's block.
Ask your boss if Canva Magic Write is right for you at canva.com, designed for work.
All right, let's talk real estate. Because if you are a potential buyer, maybe seller out there, the state of the housing market is a little bit baffling and could be frustrating. According to data out today, newly built homes are on the rebound, reaching their highest levels since September of last year. But that's newly built homes. This data comes as buying a home, though, is getting costlier. According to one new study, you must now make at least $120,000 a year to afford a median-priced home in the United States. But wait, there's more. According to Redfin, nearly 40% of homeowners would not be able to afford their current home if they had to buy it today. Now, if you lived there 20 years, totally get that. But, you know, recently, that's a little bit weird. So is the dream, the American dream of owning a home, getting further out of reach? Joining us now is chairman and co-founder of REMAX, Dave Liniger, who came in from Denver. We appreciate it, Dave. Thanks for joining us. Can you give us some good news on the housing market? Because even successful couples are looking at homes and going, we do well and we can't afford anything.
I think the only good news is we're getting closer and closer to the end of this cycle to where it's going to turn around.
Okay, what is the cycle?
Well, the cycle is extremely high interest rates versus the 2.5% to 5% that we went through for almost 15 years. Naturally, 50 years in REMAX, the average interest rate 7.78%.
Yeah.
As high as 17% in 1980.
But homes were a lot cheaper then, too.
Oh, yeah.
They right, were. So everyone says, well, I used to pay 14%. It's like, yeah, but you paid $48,000 for your home.
That's right. So right now, the market is hurt because there's more demand than there is supply. People that have 2.5%, 5% mortgages, 60% of the people who have mortgages are in that range. They won't move up and pay the 7% that's required today.
Yeah, and that's it. You're almost the business term golden handcuffs, right? Like you don't like your job, but you make too much to leave it. That's kind of where we are in real estate.
Exactly.
Right. You want to move, but you're like, well, you know what? I don't want to pay 7.5% on a new mortgage.
That will change. Right now, there's about 4 million resales a year. It should be closer to 6 to 7 million. If the interest rates start coming back down, people will start understanding a normal interest rate is 5.5%, 6%. And when that happens, I think you'll see a lot of people sell.
I have a number of friends and family members, some of whom are watching right now, hello, that are real estate agents. And they're all kind of freaked out about this change, this do you need a buyer's agent? What's going to happen to commissions? You've been doing this half a century, Dave.
Yes.
Co-founded RE/MAX, one of, if not the biggest real estate agency firms. Congrats, by the way.
Thank you.
You paid a lot of mortgages yourself for your employees and put a lot of food on the table. Can you give them some words of comfort?
You know, it seems chaotic in this market, but we've always been a cyclical business. And if you look at the oil embargoes, you look at 17% interest rates, you look at 2007 financial crisis, realtors learn to adapt, change their sales, and continue to succeed.
Are buyer's agents going away?
I think it's going to be a lot of pressure on buyer agents. We've had dual agency for 50, 60, 70 years. Mm-hmm. The buyer agency came about the thinking the buyer should have their own representative. NAR set it up to where the seller paid the commission.
Yep.
And the seller's agent shared the commission. Okay, that's changing now. They've decided that does not work. And so the buyer agent is going to have to justify themselves.
And it's pricey. Some people leave the business, but to your point, they will adapt. Dave Liniger, co-founder and chair of RE/MAX, thanks for coming out to suburban New Jersey. Safe travels back to Colorado.
My pleasure.
Beautiful, beautiful city, Denver. All right, coming up, an earnings onslaught sweeping the market. What's going to matter most to your money tomorrow and the next day? And the next day, a preview ahead. We throw up that animation. You got to pay attention because Tesla stock is up 12%. Tesla, the numbers came out. They weren't good, but maybe they weren't as bad as some had feared. You had a very upbeat, optimistic Elon Musk on the call. He talked about all the opportunities, maybe under $20,000, $30,000 Tesla. And of course, let's not forget robots. Optimus, their humanoid robot, legit, maybe working in the factory soon and maybe sold to others. I myself welcome them. When they take over, I will be a trusted news source for the Optimus robots. All right. We got another huge slate of earnings. That was a Simpsons reference, by the way. It had to do with giant ants. We got a slate of earnings tomorrow. Victoria, hold it together. Boeing, Ford, IBM, AT&T set to report their numbers. Investors keeping a close eye on Facebook/Meta as well. What do we need to watch? Joining us, Chief Investment Officer at G Squared Private Wealth, CNBC contributor, and first-timer on set. Apparently, there are flights from Houston and Newark.
Yeah.
Who knew?
LaGuardia.
Oh,
come on. New terminal,
it's gotten
not
better.
That bad.
It's done better. I can't believe you weren't on United. Or maybe you were. Victoria, good to see you in person. I think it's the first time we met.
Yeah.
By the way, can I just say that when you would come on, get up super early for my previous morning show, I really appreciate it. You crushed it on IBM. You were the first person I remember interviewing who said, buy IBM. I was like, IBM?
They still exist?
It's 4 o'clock in the morning. She must not be fully awake. You crushed it.
Yeah, and they're doing great. I think it all changed for them after the Red Hat acquisition, and I'm very excited for their earnings release. I am a little concerned, potentially soft on consulting. We need to see that Gen AI lift. We're really excited. There's a potential acquisition getting floated today. Wall Street Journal talked about if they're going to buy it or not. Obviously, they're being a little tight-lipped. Nobody mm-hmm. wants to talk about that. But they've been continuing to be very, very good on their acquisition side, and I'm looking at them, and they're a cash cow. They're still $12 billion in free cash flow a year.
And it's weird because I couldn't tell you what they do. They have 300,000 employees, and I'm not being rude to IBM or any of their employees. They used to make computers. They don't make computers anymore. Mainframes, they don't do that anymore. They sold off Lenovo. I know they're huge into consulting. They talk about AI, but I don't even know what's attractive to you about the company.
It's all about Red Hat. It's all about the hybrid cloud.
Linux, so, open, hybrids.
Yeah, because everything's going to the main public cloud, and they're also consulting on people. How do you move from all of these big data centers on-premise to connecting into the cloud but still having your hybrid on-premise cloud? How do you manage your data? How do you manage your software effectively? As well as they were the first and the OG in AI with Watson. They do have the play on the AI. They're getting a pickup there. The data center is the pickup there. So I look at them. They do play in a lot of markets, but I like them a lot.
What about Boeing? Do you own Boeing.
We have some clients that own Boeing. And look, Boeing is too big to fail for me. So I think they need to come out and they need to clean slate it. They have new leadership. They need to come out with quality, need to go back to engineering versus volume.
Yeah.
And they need to win people back. But look, we want more airplanes. Look at GE Aerospace today. Airplane demand is huge. Airbus, the backlog on airliners, massive. It's years and years. So Boeing just needs to get it together, work a little better. I fly Boeing all the time on United, so please get it together, Boeing. But I really, really think they're a good long-term buy because they're too big to fail.
Okay, we got this wall, this beautiful wall of earnings behind here. Meta, it's like all the Mag 7. Any one of those names more important to the macro market? It's got to be. I would imagine you're going to say NVIDIA, but surprise us maybe.
So Amazon's very important in the macro market because it's the retail consumer. So I think Amazon's a huge play there. I like Microsoft. I think they're big. And Apple is one of those of how many people are still buying smartphones now that they're over $1,000 a smartphone, right?
Yeah.
But my number one draft pick, because we've got the draft this week in the NFL, my number one draft pick is going to be Meta. I think if the TikTok
are you in the stocks draft?
Yeah, let's do a stock draft.
Well, no, are you in the CNBC stocks?
No,
I don't know.
Okay,
no. Yeah, me
and I didn't get that invite. Like, come on, guys.
Well, you should get the invite. You're damn good at it. And by the way, I created it sort of with Kevin Flynn, so I'm happy to, you know.
Who's like, your number one draft pick?
I'm not allowed. I'm, you know, employees can't access all the funds. We can't invest.
Oh.
You know what my number one draft pick is? Zoom in on me. Comcast. Fantastic. Great company. Underrated stock. That's the only stock I'm allowed to own. Full disclosure, so I had to get that in there. So you got IBM tomorrow,
yeah.
Boeing, low bar. We'll see where that goes. Watch it, Amazon.
Absolutely.
And I assume the inflation data on Friday.
Oh, PCE is huge. So the other one I'd mention is the power of the burrito. Don't sleep on Chipotle. They report as well tomorrow. Love that stock. I think they're one of the best out there on the
power of the burrito. Victoria Green, great to see you on set.
Absolutely.
Welcome back anytime. Thank you. And get her home safe, United. All right. Let's get now to our quicker than the ticker. All the best of the rest of the headlines. Let's put 60 seconds on the clock. X is coming to your smart TV. The app, formerly known as Twitter, being developed for the big screen. It'll feature a, quote, trending video algorithm, AI-powered topics, and more. No word on the launch date. The first ever audio platform for women's sports is coming. The Women's Sports Audio Network will be a joint partnership between iHeartMedia and Deep Blue Sports Entertainment. The company Louis Vuitton, the luxury goods maker, accounted for more of France's exports than cheese and wine combined. According to Asterisk consulting firm, LVMH accounted for 4%, while cheese and wine made up just 3.2%. Do you want a 24-karat gold bar shaped like a stick of butter and worth $100,000? I mean, who doesn't? Well, Ritz Cracker, giving customers the opportunity to win one in celebration of a new limited edition buttery-er cracker. Look at that, a coyote in New York Central Park. Brett Cohn, a New York resident, saw the coyote while on a run the other day. Now, it's not impossible. According to the Central Park Conservancy, coyotes have indeed been seen in the park periodically since the 1930s, but watch your dog. Coming up, a fresh wave of protests over the Israel-Hamas war are rocking college campuses, but this time around, wealthy donors largely staying out of the fray. Why? We'll get answers next. Well, to say it's been a wild and often scary few days on many college campuses is an understatement. Protests, encampments, hundreds of arrests ramping up again at schools like Columbia, NYU, and Yale. It's all over the Israel-Hamas war. And it really started last week when students staged a Gaza solidarity encampment on Columbia University's campus. Incidentally, it was the same day their president, Nemat Shafik, testified in front of Congress about her administration's handling of anti-Semitism and campus unrest. Concerns now hitting fever pitch. And while we will leave the politics to others, there is a big money angle here as well. Billionaire Patriots owner and major Columbia donor Robert Kraft condemning the school in a statement, saying, quote, "I'm no longer confident that Columbia can protect its students and staff, and I'm not comfortable supporting the university until corrective action is taken." His name, of course, adorns the Kraft Center for Jewish Student Life at Columbia. When Omega Family Office Chair and Columbia donor Leon Cooperman was asked if he would follow Kraft's lead on Squawk this morning, he said he's uncomfortable with what's going on, but he would continue donating when he was solicited. We'll see. Meantime, billionaire Lynn Blavatnik also speaking out today in a statement, Blavatnik saying, quote, "Columbia University's leadership must take immediate steps to ensure that Jewish students are protected from threats and intimidation, and those who violate their policies are held to account." Well, despite this turmoil this time around, other wealthy donors so far are staying on the sidelines. But remember last fall, when donor pressure led to the ouster of leaders at Penn and Harvard over those concerns, among other issues. So what's changed this time? Let's bring in CNBC's Brian Schwartz. He just published a fresh piece on this exact topic. Brian, welcome. We had what happened last fall, and now you're talking to people that are donors. What are they saying?
Well, actually, you know, the backlash from some of those donors that some of those donors saw last fall, we talked about people like Mark Rowan and maybe even Bill Ackman, who were publicly, you know, criticized in a way for, you know, coming forward and speaking out on some of these issues surrounding those private universities like UPenn and Harvard. That backlash actually, you know, really could tie into why some donors aren't coming forward this time around, right? You just mentioned a few people, you know, Bob Kraft's one. You know, these are a lot of words from these billionaires, but it's no one actually going as far, not at least not many yet, who are saying we're done giving to these universities. I spoke to one tonight, for instance, Andy Sabin, who is going that far. He's a regular donor to Yale and funds a few different projects through that university. And he's saying he is pausing his giving, at least for now. But even he admits to me that he's one of a very few set of people willing to go public with these points of the saying that they're going to pause in giving. But he also told me that there are others who are privately making this move as well. And that's a key difference, right? You're not seeing as much public outcry from people in the business community, but privately, apparently, there are some who are pulling back and saying, we're done funding at least these two universities, Yale and Columbia, at least at this time.
Yeah, and this also probably is a measure of time about how long this kind of goes on, if this kind of rolls out or is stamped out or whatever you want to say, Brian. I would imagine that would be different. But if we're still talking about this in a month, and if people are getting threatened and professors and students are afraid to go to class, or if even my guess is a lot of these schools, if they haven't already, are going to simply cancel the rest of the year and go all virtual again. But because of this, not because of a virus, that will change some minds, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, in my view, I think these protests have taken many business leaders tied to these universities and donors that have given to these institutions by surprise in terms of the amount of protests that have taken place, the impact it's had on the schools. I just sense from my conversations and frankly, a lack of responses given to us. That there is a bit of surprise of how this has taken place and how long this has gone on for. You know, we tried to get a comment from James Gorman, who's the chairman of Columbia Business School. He declined to comment to us. You know, this is where these chairman of the board, to be specific. These are kind of the people that are not coming forward yet and saying much. But to your point, that could happen in a matter of weeks if this continues to go on.
Is that the same James Gorman that used to run Morgan Stanley?
That is the same one. And we got in touch with him on Sunday night. We asked him, chairman of the board of Columbia Business School, we asked him point blank, what is the response to the protest? That's all we want to know. And he declined to comment to us on Sunday night. So that is the state of affairs right now for these people.
Brian Schwartz, new piece up on CBC.com. Urge everybody to read it. Brian, thank you. All right, coming up, Kuching, how a guy named Donald Trump just bagged one heck of a windfall courtesy of Donald Trump. We'll call this RBI SBP, short but powerful, because this one really opened our eyes, and it comes from Apollo Investments, their excellent chief economist, Torsten Slok. Slok finds that American government spending since and during COVID totaled up to 20% of our entire economic output. Now, of course, you had the CARES Act. That was a huge part. That was mostly direct spending on COVID. But then Congress didn't stop there. You had the added spending package in December, the 2021 Infrastructure and Jobs Act, then you had the CHIPS Act, then you had the Green New Deal and Build Back Better plans rebranded as the Inflation Reduction Act. All those spending packages totaled one-fifth of 1 year of American output. Compare that to how much we spent to help completely rebuild Europe after World War II. Slok notes that the Marshall Plan was just about 5.5% of American GDP. Remember, the Marshall Plan was spending to literally rebuild entire parts of Europe that were flattened and often obliterated during the war. Dresden, Cologne, etc. The Marshall Plan money went to 16 different nations. It was considered massive at the time. So Slok's trying to, I think, put our spending the last 4 years into perspective. And while many of you will have different ideas on how much that spending was really needed after the vaccines rolled out in early 2021, whatever, one thing is clear. spending of the last few years will go down as unprecedented in modern American history. And maybe the next time somebody says, man, I don't understand why the economy has held up so well. Well, you just show them that chart and you tell them that Last Call sent you. Random, but interesting. All right. Another rough day for Trump media investors. Shares of DJT fell 8%. That means Trump media has lost 40% of its value since that March peak. But despite that movement around the stock, it was actually a good economic day for the stock, the guy the stock is named after. Trump became $1 billion richer after scoring a stock bonus from Trump Media. The earnout was based on the stock closing above $17.50 a share. Mission accomplished. That brings Trump's overall stake in the company to 3.7 billion shares. How is this even possible? Joining us now is MarketWatch columnist Brett Ahrens. He's been all over this story from the start. Brett, make it make sense.
It really doesn't make sense, no, although to be honest, look, you're dealing with a guy, he's a past master at hustling. He's a past master at hustling. Whatever else you say about him, you know, he put his name on a book called The Art of the Deal that he didn't even write. You know, he's very good at branding. He's very good at playing the media, and he's very good at playing the game. When I first wrote about this story, this was about 2 weeks ago, I went through the prospectus for Trump Media and Technology, DJT, and it's a long prospectus. And when you look through the fine print, it's just amazing. The terms of this bonus are, which were written in there and nobody was paying attention to, basically was a no-lose deal for Donald Trump. The stock has basically halved since it went public. It's a little difficult to calculate because it sort of backed into a shell company. But effectively, yeah, it's half what it was when it first started trading, was it late March?
And it's insane the amount of shares that are outstanding on a company of this size.
I know.
And company's got about as much in sales as I do.
I know. But you look through the prospectus and basically, it was almost impossible that Donald Trump would not get another 36 million shares as an earnout bonus. It was based upon calculations that I won't even bore your viewers with, but when you go through it, you say, wait a second, you know, it's almost impossible for him to lose. You know, he is a very good hustler. He is a very good, he's very good at marketing. He's been very good at playing the media now for 6 years, whatever. This is just another hustle. This is like the $400 sneakers. He's sold the stock. He's marketed the stock. The stock benefits from his presidential campaign. The company has no financials whatsoever. This is beyond. I cut my teeth during the dot-com bubble. This is even worse than the dot-com bubble. There's nothing in there. It's a pure stock option.
Yeah.
It's a pure gamble, and yet he's come away with billions. Brilliant.
It is. It's an unbelievable story, and it ain't over yet. Brett Ahrens, we're glad you're on it. Really appreciate it. Thank you very much. Well said, folks. That is it for Last Call for tonight. We will see you tomorrow. Shark Tank is next.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.